ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ नमो भगवते ॐ नमो वायवस्वताय मृत्यवे वायवस्वताय ब्रह्मविद्याचार्याय ब्रह्मविद्याचार्य नचिकेतसे च नचिकेतसे च Good. Welcome back. We'll continue our study of Katha Upanishad. We began in our previous class one of the most instructive passages you're likely to find in any Upanishad. So we'll return to where we left off. We just began the 18th mantra. Let me get down to that. So in this mantra and the mantras that follow, we have the most clear, instructive, profound discussion about who you are. And what we'll see is the discussion is partly analytical, because the analysis has to dismiss what you are not, but then it's partly a matter of direct discovery. And as we discussed in the Q&A session, partly unmediated recognition of who you are. And that word unmediated is I haven't used it in a long, long time. And it's a very helpful word, because nothing comes in the middle. In order to see me, something comes in the middle. In fact, two things come in the middle. They're called eyeballs. So their sight, vision, is mediated by eyes. There's no direct contact of your mind with my physical presence. Similarly, the sound of my voice is mediated by your ears. There's no direct connection between your mind and the sound of my voice. If I were to describe to you a mathematical expression, that your knowledge of that mathematical expression will be mediated by the words and symbols that I choose to use. So all of these conventional forms of knowledge are mediated by some kind of instrument like our senses, or mediated by words, mediated by concepts. As we go through the class today, let us see if we can find what it means to have unmediated knowledge of yourself. Knowledge that doesn't require eyes or ears, knowledge that doesn't require words or concepts. This is what we're after, and we'll see that as we proceed. So we had seen just the first line of the 18th mantra, so let's return to the 18th. Na jayate mriyate, na jayate mri, va vipaschanna, va vipaschan, nayam kutaschan, nayam kutaschan, nababhuva kaschata, nababhuva kaschata, ajonityaha, ajon. Shashvato yam purano, shashvato yam pura, na hanyate, na hanyat, hanyamane sharire, hanyamane sharire. Good. In the prior class, remember that we observed that this verse comes almost as is in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, verse 20. Just a few words are different compared to this. And in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, Sri Krishna is teaching Arjuna. Here in the Kathopanishad, Yama is giving this profound instruction to young Nachiketa. So he tells Nachiketa that Vipashchin comes due to Sunday. Vipashchit is one who's knowledgeable, one who has gained this unmediated recognition of one's true nature, one who is enlightened. So that for that enlightened person, najayate, we'll just see the word meaning and then we'll go more deeply. Najayate, that enlightened person, the enlightened person is now referring to the true self. The enlightened person is one who says, I am Satchidananda Atma. So that Satchidananda Atma, najayate, is not born. Namriyate, is not subject to death. Na ayam, that much we saw in the last class, na ayam kutashchit. I am this one, this Satchidananda Atma. Na kutashchit, doesn't come from something. Kutashchit means from something. Na kutashchit, it doesn't come from something. Atma doesn't come from something else. When you were born, Satchidananda Atma already existed. And we'll come back to that. So na ayam kutashchit, this Atma, this self, this consciousness. And just to take a moment to establish this in the reality of our experience, the consciousness we're talking about, the Satchidananda Atma we're talking about, is the consciousness by which you know what's happening right now. There's no other Atma except for the consciousness present in this experience. Allow me to say that once again. There is no other Atma other than the consciousness present in this very moment. If you ask, how is that Atma? That's a good question. But don't think that Atma is some entity floating around there someplace. Don't turn it into an abstract concept. Don't turn it into something external. Okay. So that Atma, that consciousness, na kuchaschit, it doesn't come from anything. Na bhuva kaschit, excuse me. That Atma doesn't come from anything and doesn't become anything. Na bhuva kaschit, is not the result of anything else, nor is it a result for something else. Nothing comes before Atma. Nothing comes after Atma. Atma is not the result of something else. Atma does not lead to anything else. And we'll put this on a solid footing in just a moment. Right now we're just seeing words. So therefore, Atma is ajaha, unborn, nityaha, eternal, shashvataha, unchanging, ayam puranaha, this one is puranaha, ancient in the sense of uncreated, and finally, nahanyate, it does not get killed, nahanyate, it doesn't perish, hanyamane sharire, when this body dies, nahanyate, it doesn't die. All right. This verse you'll probably remember from the Bhagavad Gita. When we teach it in the context of the Bhagavad Gita, it's taught in the context of chapter 2. Here, we're seeing it in the context of this very profound discussion in Kathopanishad. So we'd like to take it to a deeper level, as it were. And that level is introduced by Sri Shankaracharya's statement in his commentary, when he says the purpose of this verse is sarva vikriya pratishedhartam. The purpose of this verse is the pratishedha, the dismissal of sarva vikriya, of all possible changes. We're talking about Atma, and what we're going to establish is that Atma is changeless. Atma is unchanging. You've heard me use this language many times. We're now going to go through it according to the teachings of Shankara and all the great teachers. They have a model, a sixfold model of change. So we're going to analyze, we're going to study what are these six possible kinds of change and see if any of them can possibly apply to consciousness. So let us see that. So what we're about to see then, and I'll stay with all Roman characters so no one will have a problem reading any of this. So we're going to talk about what is called Shad Vikriya. Which is six changes or modifications. So what are the Shad Vikriya? What are the six modifications or changes that anything can be subject to? First, and they're all given as verbs, which is a little unusual, but that's the convention. The first is asti, which simply means is, and I'll come back and give a deeper meaning to each of these. Asti is jayate, is born. Jayate is born. Vardhate grows. Vipari namate changes, maybe transforms, we'll call that. Apakshiyate decays, and the last, Vinashyati, dies. There are other words that could be used, but these are the six that are traditionally used by the scholars who teach this kind of Vedanta. Asti, jayate, vardhate, viparinamate, apakshiyate, vinashyati. These are the shadvikara, the six possible changes something can undergo. Start with number two, jayate. Something is born, like your body, like your mind. Jayate, born. Vardhate, grows. Certainly applies to body and mind. They undergo a process of growth. Viparinamate, transforms. Everything is constantly transforming, even in our bodies. Cells are dying. Actually, I'm not sure that's the right metaphor to give at this point. When I think of changes of the body, everything I'm thinking about is apakshiyate. And that's what we're most familiar with reference to the body, that our bodies are undergoing a process of decay. So we can find much evidence of the decay of the physical body. Viparinamate would be transformation. How about transformation from a condition of illness to health? That would be a good example. Or from health to illness. These would be good examples of viparinamate, undergoing some kind of change or transformation. Apakshiyate, undergoing gradual decay, decline. And finally, vinashyati, body will die, along with it, the brain and mind. Asti doesn't sound like it fits here. And the way there are several ways of explaining it. The way it's usually explained is that after muriyate, after something dies, and before jayate, before it is born, what is present? There must be something present, because something doesn't come from nothing. Jayate born doesn't mean your something comes into existence from sheer non-existence. What we teach in Vedanta and in other traditions is that what is avyakta, unmanifest, becomes vyakta, manifest, and that's what we call jayate, birth. Janma, birth, is the unmanifest becoming manifest. So therefore, after vinashyati and before jayate, there's a condition, an unmanifest condition. That condition is here referred to with asti, that which exists after death and before birth, that from which something comes forth. So our bodies came forth from a sperm and egg, was a precursor for our physical bodies. So talking about a precursor, that would be the precursor condition, is represented by asti. So these are the six kinds of change that anything can be understood to undergo. And basically, this applies to anything and everything in the world is subject to these six forms of change, six kinds of change. Let's apply them to Satchidananda Atma. And we'll just use a simple word, consciousness, your consciousness. Or as we've joked before, you consciousness. And we've made that observation because consciousness is not what you possess. Remember this discussion? Your consciousness is actually an improper expression because it's not yours. You don't possess it. It is you consciousness. It is a consciousness which is your fundamental nature. Jayate. Is that consciousness born? Body is born, and when the body and mind is born, the consciousness which was already present becomes reflected in your mind, but it is your mind and brain that is kind of kicking in, as it were, not consciousness, consciousness already present. So therefore, for consciousness, na jayate, there is no birth for consciousness, na vardhate, there is no growth for consciousness. Our bodies grow, our minds grow, our understanding grow, we grow emotionally, we grow spiritually, we grow in compassion and understanding, we grow intellectually, we grow in all these ways, but these forms of growth are growth for the mind, for the personality, some kinds of growth for the body. None of this, of course, belongs to consciousness. Consciousness doesn't grow. What we're establishing is that consciousness is utterly unchanging. That's the bottom line. Then, navartate, na viparinamate, doesn't undergo any kind of transformation. And a good kind of transformation to consider would be the transformation from waking state to dream state, the transformation from dream state to sleep, deep sleep, dreamless sleep. And we may think that our consciousness is undergoing transformations, or when we go deeply into meditation, we may wrongly assume that our consciousness is undergoing various kinds of transformation. But it simply isn't so, because the consciousness by which your waking state is known is identical to the consciousness by which your dream state is known. Right now, whatever is happening is known to you. When you're dreaming, are your dreams known to someone else? They're known to you. Are they known to the same you or a different you? Is there such a thing as a different you? There's no different you. There's only you. There's only the you consciousness. The consciousness which you are, which is aware of what's happening now in a waking state, is the same consciousness that you are, revealing what happens in your mind during dreams. And it is the same consciousness which you are, shining in the darkness of deep sleep. In our last class, we gave that metaphor of, we had that discussion about the nature of deep sleep, and we established, I hope you followed that very important discussion, that in deep sleep, consciousness is utterly unchanged. you are as conscious in deep sleep as you are now. Your mind and brain, however, are in extremely different conditions between deep sleep and your condition right now. But as regards to consciousness, absolutely the same in all the three states of experience. Therefore, na parinamate, viparinamate, there is no change or transformation. There are no states, which leads to a little bit of a problem with modern English. So many people speak of states of consciousness. For someone who understands Vedanta well, that's the equivalent of nails on a blackboard. Because there are no states of consciousness. Consciousness is consciousness. So when I hear, oh, states of consciousness, and it sounds so impressive, and you read that expression in so many modern books and publications, true? But based on what we're discussing, can consciousness have different states? Doesn't, if consciousness is unchanging, how can it have different states? Na viparinamate, undergoes no changes whatsoever, no transformations. Therefore, there are no states of consciousness. There is only consciousness. Apakshiyate, decays. In fact, we discussed in that last class also. Alertness can decay. We have this experience like when we're getting drowsy and sleepy, which will probably start happening in another 5 minutes or so. Evening is not the best time for this class, so I appreciate that. I understand that. So, in this class, you might find yourself kind of doing this. I notice, by the way, I don't say anything, but it's kind of hard not to see. And I understand. You know, you've had a long, busy day, and this is the end of a long, busy day. It happens. It happens. In fact, just a quick anecdote, during our three-year course in the 1980s, we also had long, busy days. When we lived at the ashram, we had a lot of work to do in addition to our classes and studies. So I did a lot of work, and then sometimes because of the busy schedule and not quite enough sleep, there was so much to do, not quite enough sleep, so I would occasionally be drowsy. But I made the mistake, I always sat in the front row. And when you start doing this in the front row, it's really embarrassing. Not good. All right. So, apakshiyate, sometimes we may feel like consciousness is waning, getting dim. And this is apakshiyate. If you were to conclude that when you get drowsy, that your consciousness, your so-called power of consciousness, that's another one. Consciousness is not a power. Not a power. And that's a discussion for another day, maybe. So if you feel like your consciousness is getting weaker or dimmer as you become drowsy, absolutely untrue. How do we know it's untrue? You know when you're drowsy. Who knows when you're drowsy? You do. The you consciousness knows the drowsiness. Drowsiness is an attribute of your mind. Brightness is an attribute of your mind. The brightness and dullness of your mind is known to the unchanging consciousness, which is you, the observer. So, na apakshiyate, there is no decline or decay for consciousness. And finally, na vinashyati, doesn't die. In fact, only that which is born can die. If Atma didn't get born in the first place, how can it be subject to death? Body is born, therefore subject to death. Mind and brain, born, therefore subject to death. Consciousness, unborn, not subject to death. And if there's no death or birth, is there any condition between the two? Now we're up on asti. So we had described asti as a condition following death and prior to birth, a precursor condition for that which gets born, and that which doesn't get born doesn't have a precursor condition. So this is a very traditional analysis to apply this doctrine, this teaching of these six possible vikaras, six possible changes. Shadvikriya, vikara. Shankaracharya used the term vikriya, but the term it comes in most textbooks is actually vikara. Shadvikara. Six changes, six transformations. So we've just established that Atma is utterly free from all six of these possible changes. Isn't that enough to establish that Atma is unchanging? And let's reflect on the significance of this. The consciousness by which you know what's happening now, the consciousness present in this very ordinary experience, that consciousness doesn't change. We experience lots of change, of course. Things around us are changing. Our bodies are changing, moving. Our minds are constantly moving, except deep sleep. Our minds are moving so much, thoughts, emotions, perceptions, moving through our minds. There's lots of change and activity. All of that change and activity is witnessed by an unchanging observer. Unchanging observer free from the shadvikara. And just to finish up this verse then, we can identify that the verse kind of ticks these off one at a time. Najayate, that's number two. Namriyate, number six. Na ayam kutashchit, doesn't come from anything. Na ayam kutashchit, doesn't come from anything, which means Jayate doesn't come from asti, so we've dismissed number one. Na babhuva kashchit, doesn't become anything, doesn't become something else, doesn't undergo any kind of transformation. That transformation could also be, this apakshiyate is almost kind of related. So na babhuva kashchit, doesn't become anything, it doesn't transform into something else, nor does it become less. So those first two lines, as Shankara says, this verse dismisses all of these possible changes. Therefore, since Atma is unchanging, therefore consciousness is ajaha, unborn, nityaha, eternal, and our definition of nitya really is unchanging. What does eternal mean? Eternal is not a long time, right? Long time means what? If a long time is eternal, this is my guru's joke, if a long time is eternal, then styrofoam is eternal. We put it in the landfills, and in 1,000 years it'll still be there. I am convinced that future archaeologists are going to study landfills from New Jersey, and they're going to conclude that the late 20th and early 21st centuries were the styrofoam age because of the amount of styrofoam buried in the ground. All right. If a long time is eternal, then styrofoam is eternal. Eternal cannot mean a long time. Eternal does mean, nitya does mean timeless. Now, that's a little abstract. What do we mean by timeless? And forgive me, this is very abstract and a little kooky, but let me try it on you. How old is 1 pound? What? How old is 1 pound? How long does 1 inch last for? Huh? Well, you get the point that the dimension of time does not apply to weight or distance. weight and distance are free from the dimension of time. Your body is not free from the dimension of time. Your mind is not free from the dimension of time. Consciousness is free from the dimension of time. Anything in the world is within what Einstein called time-space, these four dimensions. Everything in the world exists in these four dimensions. Your consciousness is not one more thing in the world that exists in these four dimensions. Therefore, nityaha, eternal in the sense of timeless. Shashvata also means eternal, but we can take it in the sense of changeless or eternal, makes no difference. Shashvata, eternal. And Purana, ancient, literally ancient, but ancient, these words all end up meaning pretty much the same thing. Ancient means it was the same thing then, it's the same thing now, it will be the same thing in the future. This is our concept then of unchanging. Therefore, nahanyate hanyamane sharire, when the physical body dies, when the body and mind undergo any change whatsoever, nahanyate. This consciousness doesn't die, doesn't get affected, doesn't change or become altered in any way whatsoever. And then, the same theme continues in the 19th mantra. Hanta chen manyate hantum, hanta chen manyate hatash chen manyate hatam, hatash chen manyate ubhau tau navijani to, ubhau tau navijani nayam hanti nahanyate, nayam hanti nahanyate. And this verse is also related to Bhagavad Gita. The prior one, the verse prior to the preceding one related to verse 20. This one relates to verse 19. And the second line is an exact duplicate of the second line of chapter 2, verse 19. First verse is similar. Second verse is identical. And just illustrating this idea, nahanyate hanyamane sharire, when the body dies, Atma doesn't die, Atma is unaffected. Hanta chet, suppose hanta. Someone who is a, hanta literally means killer. Suppose a killer, manyate, thinks, hantum. Hantum means that person should be killed. So the killer thinks, I'm going to kill that person, and hataha chet, and the person who's killed or about to be killed, chet, suppose that person, manyate, thinks, hatam, I'm finished, I'm dead. So suppose a killer thinks, I will kill. Suppose a victim thinks, I will be killed. I'm paraphrasing a bit. Ubhau tau, both of them, both the killer and the killed, navijani taha, they don't understand. They don't get it. They don't know. What don't they know? Na ayam, I am this one. I am atma. I should just point out a little bit of grammar. I am is actually a masculine pronoun. Why? Because atma happens to be a masculine noun. Atma has no gender, but grammatically, atma is masculine in gender. So when this masculine pronoun comes, I am, it definitely means I am atma. This atma, nahanti, doesn't kill. Nahanyate, nor is it killed. This is a verse at the same line that Sri Krishna taught to Arjuna. Arjuna wasn't so afraid of being killed. Arjuna didn't want to kill. So the reason that Sri Krishna gave us this instruction. Atma nahanti. Atma is not an agent of action. In order to be an agent of action, don't you have to be involved with some of these? There has to be some change involved. In order to make a decision, Doesn't something have to change? Indecision is no change. Decision means a change. Action. Every act we take, if I move my hand or move my lips and tongue, all of these actions are initiated in my mind, are they not? Our brains, our minds initiate all action. Well, here's an external action, moving my hand and moving my lips. These external actions are initiated by internal actions, actions of my mind. But action means change. A mind that is, notice I said mind, a mind that is actionless, a mind that is changeless, is capable of what? Nothing. As in deep sleep or samadhi, in these conditions, the mind is actionless. The mind is changeless. The mind is free in samadhi and deep sleep. The mind is free from these six vikaras, these six transformations or modifications. But in those conditions, what can the mind do? Absolutely nothing. So the presence of any kind of activity whatsoever indicates the presence of internal change. Atma, on the other hand, is incapable. It's funny to say the word incapable. Atma is incapable of action. True. Of course, that incapacity, we usually think of incapacity as a defect. In this case, this incapacity points to a transcendent nature of Atma. Atma transcends this realm of time, space, and change. All right. That's all we need for this verse. So let us move on. Because so this theme continues to help us understand, and we have to, maybe with this verse we'll talk a little bit more about that sense of unmediated recognition. So let's see if we can work that into this verse. Anoraniyan, anorani, mahato mahiyan, mahato mahi, atmasya jantor, atmasya janto, nihito guhayam, nihito guhayam, tamakratuhu, tamakratu, pasyati vita shoko, pasyati vita. Dhatu prasarad, dhatu prasarad, mahima, mahimanam, mahimanam atmanaha, mahimanam atmanaha. Talking about that consciousness, that Atma, which is anoho aniyan. Anoho, compared to something that is very small or very subtle, like an atom, it is aniyan, more small, more subtle. To use a common translation, smaller than small. How small? You would say, Swamiji, how small? However small you think, smaller than that. But Swamiji, what if something's smaller than that? Okay. Smaller than that. So whatever degree of smallness, smaller than that. And contrary-wise, mahato, mahataha, mahiyan. Mahataha, compared to that which is big, mahiyan. It is bigger. Smaller than small, bigger than big. Again, Swamiji, how big? Whatever you can think, bigger. Now, these words, it's a poetic kind of expression. Even in English, we use these expressions all the time. Smaller than small, bigger than big, what we're describing is something that has no dimension. Moments ago, we talked about nitya, eternal, meaning free from the dimension of time. Now we're talking about something which is free from the dimension of space. Space has three dimensions. You learned that long ago. So that which is free from all three dimensions of space is anoho niyan, smaller than small, and mahataha mahiyan, bigger than big. Smaller than small, bigger than big, because it has no size, it has no dimension. You can't measure it. And to go back to the earlier strange example I gave, if I asked you, how wide is 1 pound? That doesn't make any sense, right? How tall is 1 year? Again, dimension of space doesn't apply to weight, doesn't apply to time. So here we're talking about consciousness. Consciousness has no spatial dimension, which means consciousness is nowhere. Where is consciousness? Is it here? Is it there? Where is it? If it's dimensionless, what shall we say? There's a nice pun. My friend Jim is fond of this pun. So if consciousness is nowhere, nowhere means in no particular place, but then if it's in no particular place, what is to prevent, if consciousness is in no particular place, being dimensionless, consciousness is in no particular place. Being dimensionless, consciousness has no edge, has no boundary, has no limit. If consciousness has no edge, boundary, or limit, what is to prevent consciousness from being now here? So consciousness is nowhere, it's in no particular place, but consciousness having no edge or boundary is truly now here. And as we've discussed before, one all-pervasive consciousness, one boundaryless, limitless, all-pervasive consciousness reflected in so many minds, each of our minds reflecting that one consciousness. All right, which is not our topic, so I don't want to go further on that. But this line, smaller than small, bigger than big, refers to consciousness being free from a dimension of space. The word nitya in a prior verse means free from a dimension of time. Now, smaller than small, bigger than big, free from dimensions of space. And also, if consciousness is nowhere, how can we... Now, this is the right place. If consciousness is nowhere, how can we have what I've been describing as unmediated recognition? How is that unmediated recognition possible if I can't find Atma someplace? Generally, if you want to discover something, you go look for it. If you have lost your keys in your home, you have to search around your home to find your keys. So if you want to discover Atma, you look around where? Well, that's what this next line describes. Atma, that consciousness, that Satchidananda Atma, asya jantoho, of a creature. Jantu, creature, asya jantoho, of any creature, of some creature, including you and I, that kind of creature. Asya jantoho nihitam, nihitaha guhayam. Guhayam, literally, in the cave, asya jantoho, in the cave of a creature. That's literally, this is poetry, this is what it says literally. You know, if you read poetry too literally, you just ruin it completely. In the cave of a creature means in the heart of a living being. It says, in the cave of a creature, It means in the heart of a living being. It is, Atma is Nihita. Atma is, Atma abides. Atma Nihitaha, Atma abides. Guhayam, in the heart, Asya Jantoho, of a creature of every creature. Now, abides in the heart. Heart is also a metaphor. Heart obviously doesn't mean a physical organ. Heart in Sanskrit, hridaya or hrit, or this expression, hridaya guha, the cave of the heart, always refers to buddhi, intellect. Guha here, the cave is referring to your mind. The cave refers to your intellect. And why does it refer to your mind or intellect? Because where does experience take place? When you have an itch on your nose, where does that experience take place? Not on your nose. When you stub your toe and feel pain, where does that experience take place? Not in your toe. Takes place in your mind. Of course, all experience takes place in our mind. So in that cave, in that buddhi, in that region we call heart, guhayam, in that heart, asya jantoho, of every creature, atma nihitaha, atma abides. Now, very significant, because if atma were nowhere, we couldn't find atma. But if atma is now here, kind of a nice word. If atma is nowhere, can't be found. If atma is now here, it should be available for recognition. And of course, atma indeed is now here. In the last class, we said, you are conscious, right? You haven't fallen asleep yet. Of course, we already established, even when you're asleep, you're conscious, but then you won't hear what I'm saying. So, but right now, you can actually hear what I'm saying. It's a good thing. So the consciousness, because of which you can hear what I'm saying right now, that consciousness is present. That consciousness is now here. You might be thinking that consciousness is the most ordinary thing. That's a consciousness I've had since childhood. That's a consciousness that's with me all the time, every day, all day long, in all my dreams. That can't be Satchidananda. Wait a minute. That's where Vedanta begins. You take consciousness as being ordinary. The rishis discovered it was extraordinary. What you might take to be the most ordinary fact of your existence as a conscious being, your consciousness, this is what the ancient rishis discovered to be not only Satchidananda, but they discovered it to be non-separate from the reality because of which everything exists. Brahman. And they express that truth in the Mahavakyas like Tat Tvamasi. Tvam, the consciousness that you think is so ordinary, Tadasi, is actually that reality because of which the universe exists. That which you take as ordinary is absolutely extraordinary. So how to discover it? Let's see the ending part of this verse. Tam akratuhu pashyati vita shokaha. Akratuhu tam pashyati. Akratuhu. Akratuhu is a the literal meaning of the word is not very helpful. Kratu usually means ritual. Akratu literally means then someone who doesn't do rituals. Now you have to think like the ancients thought. Why would you do rituals in ancient times? Because you wanted something. You wanted something. If you want the rains to fall on your crops, do some rituals. If you want the birth of a son, do some rituals. If you want health and progeny, do these rituals. In ancient times, kratu, rituals were done for the sake of fulfilling desires. Therefore, akratuhu, as Shankara says, he does say someplace, he says, akratuhu akamaha, someone who doesn't have any desire. Drishta adrishta bahya vishayebhyaha uparata buddhihi, someone who is absolutely indifferent towards all objects seen and unseen. This is a state of vairagya, one of the qualifications for someone who's seeking spiritual growth. If you're still seeking worldly pleasure, you will never really seek spiritual growth. So therefore, the true pursuit of spiritual growth begins when there is the cessation of pursuing worldly enjoyment. So akratuhu, that one who is free from desires, that person pashyati, sees, that's what it means, pashyati literally means see, pashyati tam, sees that, tam. That what? Shankara explains, tam, atmanam. That person who is free from desire sees atma. Sees atma? Atma can be seen? Where? That which has no dimensions can be seen? That which has no form, shape, color, etc., can be seen? Why in the world would Yama use the word pashyati, to see? You see that one. You see atma. The word see is a metaphor. Why didn't he say no? Because the word no can be very abstract, very conceptual. Sight is not conceptual. Sight is much more immediate. So here, that word pashyati suggests what I've been calling this unmediated recognition. Now, let me explain what that means. Consciousness is already present in this experience, but you don't know what it is. You know you're conscious, but you don't know the nature of that consciousness. Suppose, with the help of these teachings, you discover that the nature of your consciousness is unchanging. Right now, you're not so sure. But suppose, with the help of these teachings, you discover that the me consciousness, the consciousness by which I know what's happening right now, this consciousness, I consciousness, is utterly unchanging. That consciousness is immediately present in this experience. You recognize it for what it is. This is what I mean by unmediated recognition. You recognize it for what it is, and there are no words or ideas in between. It just is what it is. The purpose of these teachings is actually to dismiss any wrong conclusions about your consciousness. If you think consciousness changes, no, it doesn't. If you think consciousness is born, na jayate. If you think consciousness dies, na mriyate. If you think consciousness changes, na parinamate. If you think consciousness decays, na apakshiyate. The purpose of Vedantic teachings is to dismiss all your wrong conclusions about Atma. This is very important. Listen. The purpose of Vedanta is to dismiss all the wrong conclusions. That is a thinking process. When all wrong conclusions are dismissed, consciousness isn't dismissed. Consciousness remains present. All wrong conclusions are dismissed, and consciousness is immediately present as it is. Unmediated recognition. This is what it means to discover your true nature. It means to appreciate your consciousness having dismissed all possible wrong conclusions. So we're going to finish up dismissing our wrong conclusions here. So, Oh, in fact, here, tam atmanam darshana shravana manana vijnana lingam. This is how Shankara defines this consciousness, this atma. He says, that which is apparent whenever there is darshana, seeing, shravana, hearing, manana, thinking, vijnana, knowing, it lingam, it is indicated, it is obvious in the function of seeing, hearing, thinking, etc. And how, pashyati, how does one see or discover that atma? Dhatu prasadat. Dhatu prasadat. What are we doing here? Prasadat, due to, prasada has different meanings, can often mean grace or blessing. And here, dhatu, Shankara has to explain, dhatu often means like some kind of material. Here, dhatu is referring to our faculties. Our faculties like thinking and seeing, etc. So, dhatu prasadat could mean due to the blessing of our faculties, one can pashyati tam, one can see that atma. But prasada has another meaning. In fact, prasada has a lot of meanings. We have to pick the right one in context. So here, prasada doesn't mean a blessing or grace. Prasada also means clarity. It's often used when the sky is very clear. There are no clouds, there's no fog. Then you can talk about the akasha prasada, the clarity of the sky. Or if you're looking into a pond, if the water is all mucky and you can't see the bottom of the pond, there's a lack of prasada. But if there is prasada of the pond, clarity of the pond, you can look into that pond and you can see the pebbles on the bottom of the pond. So that clear, still pond is the metaphor we're after here. Dhatu prasadat, when you have the same clarity of your faculties, when your mind is free from being clouded, just as the pond water is often murky, our minds are often murky too, clouded. The pond is murky with dirt and so forth. Our minds are murky with different kinds of impurity, especially the impurity called ignorance. When our minds are unclouded by the impurity of ignorance, when our minds have that prasada, the same kind of clarity that a pond, a very clear pond, can have, then tam pashyati, then one can discover the true nature of atma, one can discover mahimanam atmanaha, one can discover the mahimanam, the greatness, atmanaha, of atma. We've already pointed out that atma is already known to you. Every one of you will say, I am conscious. And that consciousness is atma. So we cannot say that atma is unknown. But we do recognize that there are many wrong conclusions about that atma. You take that atma as being ordinary, but with these teachings, with that clarity of mind, one can discover mahimanam atmanaha, the glory of atma. The fact that that consciousness that you thought was ordinary, that consciousness indeed is extraordinary, and thereby the one who sees becomes vitashokaha, the last word of the verse. Vitashoka, free from grief, free from sorrow, free from suffering. Discovering the mahimanam, discovering the greatness, discovering, and as Usha was saying in our Q&A session, discovering that you're okay no matter what. That's the point. Discovering that your consciousness is unchanging. If your consciousness is unchanging, then it's utterly unaffected by any experience, including all the unpleasant, painful experiences. If your consciousness is unaffected by painful experiences, you are okay no matter what. That is mahimanam atmanaha. That is the glory of atma. That's the magnificence of Atma. And one who discovers that, Vita Shokaha. You become free from all suffering, all concerns. Now, we'll wrap up the class here. There's a question dangling, which will be addressed in the next sequence of verses. And the question is, if Atma is unchanging, why do I feel like it changes? Right? It feels like consciousness is constantly changing. What is it? If consciousness truly is unchanging, then why isn't that obvious to us? On the other hand, why do we constantly think that consciousness is affected by everything? When the body is ill, consciousness seems to be affected. When the mind is ill, consciousness seems to be affected. Whatever happens to the body or mind seems to affect the Atma. If Atma were truly unchanging, Atma can't be affected by anything, but Atma seems to be affected. How does that happen? And that's our discussion for the next class. Okay, we'll conclude here with our prayers.